College campuses all over the U.S. are being flooded with Free Palestine protesters, but some frat boys and some state troopers are fighting back. Today, I want to talk about what's really behind these college campus protests on Indie Thinker. A new bill is making its way through the California legislature that would ban Clear. Now, what is Clear? Clear is a service that lets people skip the security line at airports with nothing but a biometric scan and $189. You've probably seen the machines before. Some California lawmakers want to make changes to it in the state, saying it separates travelers into haves and have-nots. Now, I think there's something interesting to note about this service. What's odd about it is that no one in California, including French laundry enthusiast Gavin Newsom, is protesting first class or private jets with huge carbon footprints. No, they don't want to talk about that. It's kind of weird, right? Rather, they're oddly forgetting their green agenda to take aim at a mostly unimportant and simple convenience that only punishes people, right? There's no reward here. It only takes something away from people. It doesn't provide anything to anybody else. Why virtue signal with totally unimportant bills that really doesn't make life easier for people, only makes it harder? Simply because equality of outcome is a left-wing virtue that only punishes those who work hard and tends to reward those who don't even do anything but take delight in punishing other people, or at least take delight when they're punished. I bring this up because as left-wing ideas have proliferated in society, they have created safe spaces, microaggressions, and trigger warnings, and as a result of that, an incredibly coddled and privileged generation of entitled young people who think that they can march onto college campuses by the thousands, trespassing, shouting anti-Semitic slogans, shutting down graduations, and doing all sorts of other aggressive and violent acts without any repercussions whatsoever. Now, all over America, thousands of students are even bowing in Islamic prayer while they insist that Christianity is a neocolonial patriarchal system. Apparently, they have never studied Islam whatsoever. And trust me, if any of these people stepped foot in Palestine, they potentially would have a different conclusion. But all of this is simply because we have a bubble wrap generation who has never had to reap the consequences for their actions. And as a result of it, they think they can get away with all sorts of things. Today, I want to show you one of these protesters who does not make me optimistic about the future and also encourages me to think that perhaps we need a revival in America that will change things fundamentally before it's too late. Let's take a look.
I'm one of the associate directors in the Center for Student Success and Intervention.
I'm Kamani James. I use he, she, they pronouns. Zionist in my DM wanting to meet up and fight. I don't fight or for there to be a winner or loser. I fight to kill. See y'all in New York, January 2024.
Mm-hmm. So that's specifically what we're going to be discussing today. Do you see why that's problematic in any way?
No.
Do you think that there's a serious weight in taking someone else's life?
I think there is a serious weight in taking someone's life. And at the same time, I think that taking someone's life in certain case scenarios is necessary and better for the overall world. And so I personally have never killed anyone. Thank the Lord that no one has put me in that position. Though, when Hitler died, the world rejoiced. Everyone looks back at that time period and said that Hitler needed to die because he was exacting an immense amount of harm against the world. And so, just like that, during the Haitian Revolution, their Haitian slaves had to kill their masters in order to gain their independence. These were masters who were white supremacists. What is a Zionist? A white supremacist?
Columbia education, folks. This is what happens in our Ivy Leagues. Not only is our system incredibly coddling people who want to claim their intersectional bona fides, but when you get off into a major university, an Ivy League campus, you can also make sure to be safe from actually having to learn anything of value about history. other than, of course, that you just use Hitler for anybody that you don't like and who disagrees with you. This spoiled brat obviously doesn't only know nothing about history, but he also knows nothing about human decency. I want to introduce you to our friend here, but before I do that, let me just give you a understanding of the kind of people we're dealing with here on these college campuses. You've probably seen this clip of this young girl who has no idea why she's protesting.
I honestly don't know all of what NYU's doing.
Is there something that NYU's doing?
I really don't know. I'm pretty sure they're... Do you know what NYU's doing?
About what?
About Israel. Why are we protesting here?
Why are we here? Who knows? Who knows? I mean, what does it really matter? We just get to shout and bang on drums. Let me introduce you to somebody else. Take, for example, Isabel Jennifer Seward. This is according to the Free Press. It says that not only she is a daughter of a top U.S. executive at UPS, but a couple of years before finding herself cheering for Hamas, young Isabel Jennifer Seward was driving a cool pickup truck, as you know, as we often do. She didn't appear even to try to change course as she drove over the hood of an oncoming car, killing an elderly but not rich couple. She has given conflicting reports about whether or not she was texting at the time of driving. By the way, she was. Anyway, our adorable future Houthi of America was given a $220 ticket, and the whole episode ended after that. You see, Gen Z is the proverbial alligator that you wanted to feed so it wouldn't bite you, and now it's just big enough to actually do some damage. The most prominent anti-Israel, anti-Semitic protester right now is probably Kaimani James. He was just kicked off of Columbia because they couldn't stand the bad PR after this video of him was released. So let me introduce you to him. As you saw in the clip, he goes by he, she, they. Totally illogical, moronic, made-up pronouns. But he covered all bases. I mean, give him a little bit of credit. He goes by he because he is a he. Also goes by she just in case he needs to claim some kind of safe space for women. And also they because there are multiple demons in that young man. And Kaimani is a young black man, as you can see, raised by a single immigrant mother. Odd, right, that we see that a father isn't involved at all in this young man who grew up in South Boston. I continue to beat the same drum. If we don't get fathers back in homes, you can expect more of this kind of nonsense. And he was accepted by one of the city's best public high schools and then by a prestigious Ivy League college, Columbia University. In other words, he's a young black man that has been cashing in on his intersectionality since his youth. You can see this in a quote he gave. I'm a victim, therefore I get to be an aggressor. Nope, I'm sorry, son. Unfortunately, your daddy didn't tell you this growing up, but you don't get to blame your sexuality or your race on all of the difficulties of life. It is a fact of life for every single human being who has ever come into the world. I can't help but wonder if Kaimani is nothing less than a byproduct of a secular society without an understanding of sin in the world and how it impacts all of us, and a byproduct of a leftist ideology that tells him that utopia is possible. If anything bad ever happens, it's simply the system's fault, never about your personal responsibility. Forgive me, not only does my worldview give me an understanding of why bad things happen, even to people who quote-unquote call themselves good, but it also gives me the tools to overcome and push through adversity. Since when did we get the impression that all adversity is supposed to be done away with? It's impossible. You can try to get rid of God, you can try to get rid of Christianity, you can try to get rid of as many things as you possibly can, but there's some facts of life that are going to constantly stare you in the face. Utopia doesn't exist. Therefore, difficulty is a part of life, and you better gain the tools to help you deal with difficulty. Now, one last thing about this. We've heard for the longest time, Christianity is a crutch. It's just, you know, wish fulfillment. It helps you deal with kind of the difficulties of this life. Forgive me. I can't help but believe that when you get rid of the spiritual, you're only left with the material, so that when those material possessions don't show up, somehow you need to find somebody to blame rather than to take personal responsibility, which spirituality does give you. And apparently is lost on this generation. All right, let's dig into another clip from our friend as he continues to speak with the folks over at Columbia.
Be glad, be grateful that I'm not just going out and murdering Zionists. I've never murdered anyone in my life, and I hope to keep it that way.
Well, what a veiled threat. Be glad. I mean, he could go around killing people, so count your lucky stars there. Here's my question about all of this. One of the arguments that's being made right now is that all of these people on college campuses, well, they're just exercising their right to free speech. You know, they're practicing the First Amendment. So therefore, we should celebrate them for being a part of the democratic process. You know, you Republicans all the time talk about free speech. You conservatives, you love free speech until somebody comes along and has free speech that you don't like. Was this really a matter of free speech? And more importantly, is there any real limits to free speech? See, I'm starting to question whether or not I should be a free speech absolutist. And here's why. Let me give you an analogy. Tattoos are really cool, some young people think. But have you ever seen a super cool tattoo on an 89-year-old man? Probably not. You know why? Because some things make more sense when you're a young person than when you're older. Why is it that you don't see 50-year-olds and 60-year-olds really ever attending protests? Is it because they've just lost their will to fight and they're weaker than 20-year-olds at Columbia University? Or perhaps older people, have the wisdom and the knowledge to be able to see that you need to be able to protest things that are worth protesting. So in other words, I believe in protesting. I believe it is a hallmark of democracy, yes, but it should be used for protesting unjust laws. And here's the real problem. How do we know what an unjust law is? Well, the only way that we could know is if we actually had a standard in society that we could judge whether or not something was just or unjust. I don't know, maybe a transcendent moral standard that would truly help us all. This is what Aquinas had to say about that. Justice is a virtue that enables us to render to each person that which is his or her right, what is due to each person, what each person ought to receive. Listen to the words right and ought there. The proper object of justice is right, understood as the proper order of interrelationships established by the divine or human reason. So in other words, in order to understand what justice is, you must understand what right and wrong is, and then you find things that are worth protesting. Now, the only reason we object to this is simply because as a society, we don't know how to define right and wrong anymore. Otherwise, we might be clearly able to take the position that I'm making right now, which is we should allow protesting for unjust laws, not frivolous, stupid, grandstanding, virtue signaling protest. That shouldn't be allowed. Now, I know that's a sticky thing to claim, but I'm just going to tell you, we should certainly not allow protests that trespass and that block the entryway of people from entering buildings. These people are so retrogressive, but yet they're progressive, right? Now they won't let Jewish students into buildings. We've totally full circle come back to pre-civil rights era. So congratulations. Yeah, we're allowing anybody and everybody to protest. We're believing in free speech absolutism, but we don't know what right and wrong is anymore, and we don't know what justice and injustice is anymore. So we're doing great for ourselves. All right, let's go into one final clip.
Zionists, they don't deserve to live comfortably, let alone Zionists don't deserve to live. The same way we're very comfortable accepting that Nazis don't deserve to live, fascists don't deserve to live, racists don't deserve to live, Zionists, they shouldn't live in this world. A lot of people agree that Hitler needed to die in order for world order to move forward and in order to establish some inkling of world peace. And so if we can agree as a society, as a collective, that people, that person, some persons need to die if they have an ideology that results in the death of thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions, if there are people like that who exist, shouldn't they die?
Now, unfortunately, somewhere in the internet world, there is somebody calling what this guy just said based, and that it makes sense, right? While philosophers of old are rolling in their grave because of how stupid this guy just was in telling us who gets to live and who doesn't get to live, and that we should just kill Hitler And of course, Hitler in this case is any Jewish student on Columbia University. And it's anybody who might believe that Israel has a right to defend themselves against people who needlessly attack them on October 7th. So you get the math here. I know it's a little bit dizzying to follow such a brilliant intellect, but you are Hitler unless you violate the rights of Jews, right? You must violate the rights of Jews or you are Hitler. So paradoxical thinking, I know, but keep up with his brilliance for crying out loud. What I notice here is at least two things that I think are very, very important for us to recognize. First of all, he tells us he'd be glad that I'm not going around killing people, and then he pontificates in this way and tells us that there are people who deserve to die. Well, this is very interesting, and I can't help but view this as a very simple equation. When God is absent from society, something will take its place. Now, for the longest time, people have said about Christianity, at least skeptics, well, you Christians are just looking for rewards and punishment because you need some way to make sense of difficulty in life, and you need some way to talk about the good things that happen in life. So you say God is rewarding you for good and he's punishing you for bad. And so all of the incentive structure of you Christians is just self-imposed and made up. Well, let me bring to your attention that all of life is an incentive structure. Started thinking about this the other day, that so much of what life is based upon a incentive structure one way or the other, whether it's Christian or not. I'm just going to argue that when you don't have God, the reward and punishment structure looks very wonky. So when God is not on the throne, you get to punish whoever you want to, and you get to reward whoever you want to, willy-nilly, arbitrarily, no matter what. You get to reward your friend and punish your enemies, even if your enemies are right. This goes back to a saying that I love to remind you guys of. When God is not on the throne, someone will take his place. Now, let me tell you, that almost all the time is you. You become God when God is not real to you. When you don't believe in a God, you make yourself God almost always. Everybody's worshiping something. But maybe even more scary is the idea that when God is gone, so is Satan. So maybe you are God, but Satan then has to be replaced too. And often, who do you replace him with? Well, anybody you don't like. And that means that anybody you don't like becomes the enemy. You can punish them as much as you want. And this is the problem with replacing Christianity, especially in the West, with leftism. This is what you get. So you might want to get God back on the throne before it's too late. And the second thing is this. Kymani Jones, he's a byproduct of the Death is God movement in that not only when God is on the throne, rewards and punishments get to be dictated by the individual, but also where meaning comes from is anybody's guess. And I think that all we can say is that meaning really isn't coming. You have to try to fabricate it from this cause and that cause and activism here and activism there. And we're finding over and over and over again that not only is it absolutely mentally bankrupt, but it's also spiritually bankrupt. It doesn't provide people the kind of meaning that they're truly looking for. Therefore, they will go to the garbage dumps to try to find that meaning. They will look far and wide and never find it, such that they will come up with ridiculous things like what we just saw in order to get it. In other words, we're experiencing an existential crisis in the West because we have said Christianity, at least our society, has largely said we're secular and we think Christianity should be private and pushed over to one side, maybe go to your prayer closet or something like that, and that's where it should be practiced. But in the meantime, nothing we've done as a society has replaced the things that Christianity provides. Meaning, purpose, an understanding of your place in this world, why we're really here to begin with. When you don't understand ultimate purpose, anything will do. Voltaire said this, "Convince people of absurdities and you can convince them to commit atrocities." That's where we've come today. There are a bunch of people believing the most absurd, ridiculous nonsense simply because they won't believe in religion and faith, something that has undergirded every single civilization in the history of the world, including the West. You may disagree with me that Christianity is not the answer. You're entitled to be wrong. That's fine. But the real problem is that if you chip away from the foundation, don't wonder why your house is then sinking in the sand. I would encourage you to try to find a permanent foundation that can truly help society and you as an individual believe in something that truly matters. That's all the time we have for today. Thanks so much for watching. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe, and go with God.